The future of reporting now.
This is Concordia News Radio.
Good morning. It's currently 10 degrees and cloudy with a chance of rain at the Loyola campus of Concordia University. I'm Connor Tomalty. Here are today's headlines. Protests at a Montreal refinery, a warning that long-term care workers are burning out, and complaints that not all Quebec women have access to all health services. Protesters took a stand on site of the Port of Montreal. Activists presented themselves at the Valero Oil Refinery in the East Terminal. Ara Nazarian joins us now from the Port of Montreal. Ara, who's protesting and why?
Hey, Connor. So, collective Antigone, environmentalist group, has gathered to protest against the pipeline. I spoke to spokesperson Maud Vignoc, who had something to say about it.
What we're looking for is a platform to mobilize people and let them know that this pipeline is outdated and very dangerous for people's drinking water. And we have activists that are on site currently and that will stay there until we get a proper response from the government. What we're demanding is a clear plan to reduce the flow in the pipeline and eventually a clear date for the closing of the pipeline.
What is Collective Antigone looking to get out of this?
Well, they basically want them to stop using fossil fuels, and they just want to come to a point where they cease their operation from using that pipeline.
About 10 protesters left on their own, but there's still a protester on site that unchained themselves on the structure of that company. So for now, we're still trying to discuss with the protester to see what the follow-up on that protest. And for now, there's no police intervention at this point.
If there's no police intervention, what's the atmosphere looking like?
Well, the atmosphere over there, well, it's non-confrontational. The group is doing their thing. They've chained themselves to parts of the structure. Police are just there to keep peace in order and to make sure nothing gets out of hand.
Wonderful. That was Ara Nazarian reporting live. A 26-year-old driver was pulled from his car after it caught fire following a driving collision wherein he swerved off the road. The incident occurred at 5 a.m. on Autoroute 10 heading west. Firefighters on the scene responded quickly, and the driver was transported to Sherbrooke Hospital, where he remains in critical condition. Many long-term healthcare workers are struggling with chronic stress and worker burnout. To solve this issue, an activist group is working with two Canadian universities to help raise awareness of their needs. The report is aimed towards healthcare leaders and political officials. Dylan Bosanakis has the story.
The Mental Health Commission of Canada teamed up with two universities to help promote mental health care for workers in long-term care homes. Their goal is to report their findings to healthcare leaders and policymakers so they can take action. Chronic stress and burnout has been an issue for a long time, even before the arrival of the COVID-19 pandemic. A few years ago, many nonprofit, media, and government organizations warned that one of the main causes of COVID-19-related deaths in long-term care was due to the lack of support within the sector in Canada. Years later, long-term care workers continue to suffer from stress and burnout. Despite fighting for support in the long-term care sectors, not much progress has been made over the past few years. It is still unclear whether healthcare leaders and government officials will address the issues with long-term healthcare workers. However, activist groups will continue to raise awareness until this issue is resolved. Dylan Bosanakis in NDG for Concordia News.
There's a protest happening in front of Quebec Premier François Legault's office. Many women organizations are saying that women are facing a lot of difficulty to access quality, public, and free medical services in Quebec. Our reporter Marie-Hélène Catsoul spoke with Audrey Gosselin-Pellerin, who is part of a collective of feminist groups and the organizer of today's protest. She said that actions have to be taken.
We really want to bring attention to the barriers that women are confronted, that women have to go through to have access to healthcare in Quebec.
And what are those barriers?
There are many of them. First of all, the tarification and privatization of our health system is one big obstacle. It concerns especially, for example, women that have a different kind of citizen status in Quebec. There's also lots of waiting time, a lot of centralization also. We are representing women that are throughout all the 17 administrative regions of Quebec. And so the health services are centralized in big cities. So in different communities, they just don't have access to healthcare. Also, the interruption of services. Some services are not well adapted to women from different cultural contexts. And also some violent institutional violence that we are observing in the health system towards women. So bias, prejudice, that can really affect the care they receive.
How long has it been going on?
This has been going on for years, of course, but we have noticed that especially in the last decades with the neoliberal reforms that have been put in place and have really attacked our healthcare system, and with the pandemic on top of that, we can see that our healthcare system is really crumbling from all sides.
What are you expecting after this protest?
Well, we know that the Prime Minister François Legault is concerned with healthcare. He takes this subject very seriously. It's just we have a different view of the vision that should be put in place. So we hope that he hears us, that he hears our message, and also what we want, our demands for a public system that is well-financed, that is public, that is universal, that is accessible, and that doesn't discriminate against women.
That was Muriellen Catoul speaking with Audrey Gosselin-Pellerin, the organizer of today's protest involving healthcare services for women. Anglophones are recruiting plaintiffs to appeal for Quebec's Linguistic Task Force. The recruitment requirements involve those who are negatively affected by Bill 96, as well as if they have received a primary education that is neither French or English, and or have issues related to information at work or inside the healthcare system. A new study suggests that 70% of 18 to 34-year-old Canadians are using less public transport than before. The alarming statistic is part of an Interact study released this morning. We have Andreas Antoine in the studio to answer our questions. Andreas, why has ridership dropped since the pandemic?
Well, an Interact study suggests that Canadians are frustrated in how they have to pay for the public transit. In the poll that was given out to Canadians across the country, half of the people were said to tick, it should be as easy as buying a cup of coffee. And that's where the majority of the problem stems, according to the study.
But that isn't necessarily true in Montreal, is it?
That's correct. In classic fashion, Quebec seems to be zigging while the rest of Canada zags. While the report states that the transit is seeing a slower recovery than before, many people are still using public transit in Montreal. I spoke to a couple of students at the Concordia Loyola campus, and they say they've been using it more than ever before.
Also been using it more, but I feel like it's because I just don't really have any other options.
Now it doesn't seem like a big issue to me, and I see everyone taking the bus, and I'm personally fine with it.
Does the report say what can public transport do to increase ridership in the future?
Yes, it does. Introducing contactless payments instead of fumbling through your pockets for coins is one of the largest factors in order to increase ridership across the nation, and having a clearer zoning system to get across the city would be greatly beneficial.
Wonderful. Thanks, Andreas. That was Andreas Antoine with the story. Inflation rates are down for the third month in a row, according to new data from Statistics Canada. Inflation has lowered to 6.9%, but how will that affect Canadians? Zach Fortier has been looking into the numbers and joins us live. Zach, how's our wallet looking for this time of the year?
Well, Connor, 6.9% is not worth ignoring. Stats Can's September report has seen inflation rates continue to lower after numbers have been calming down by the end of the summer. Rates hit a historic high in June 2022 with 8.1% inflation, but the number is slowly dropping. The report finds that while gas prices are lower than they were this spring, the cost of Canadians' grocery bill is only increasing.
Zach, will this inflation trend change anything for workers?
Well, a lower inflation rate historically means interest rates could be on the rise, and consequently, higher interest rates could impact workers across the country. I heard from Larry Rousseau, Executive Vice President of the Canadian Labour Congress, who has several concerns for workers.
There is a difference of about 3% between the increases that workers have been getting and what the actual rate of inflation has been, which means that that 3% gap is actually a cut in wages. That means there is less spending power. An aggressive policy by the Bank of Canada to keep these rates going until the rate of inflation comes down to 3 or 2% is going to have a nefarious, disastrous effect, especially amongst people who are not in the upper income strata.
What can the government do to protect both workers and consumers?
According to the Labour Congress of Canada, immediate government intervention in the forms of price stabilization, taxation changes, and more scrutiny on multinational corporations could ensure more economic prosperity for consumers and labourers. The drop in interest rates, though, could signal a steady improvement to the Canadian economy if the right pressure is applied.
Thank you, Zach. In the entertainment world, women seem to be dominating headlines. Kim Kardashian has a new true crime podcast, comedian Lisa Gilroy has a funny Twitter skit, and Nicki Minaj's latest single, Super Freaky Girl, is gaining controversy at the upcoming Grammys. Gabrielle Lapierre LeBlanc is here to tell us more. I can lick it, I can ride it while you slipping and sliding.
I can do all them little tricks and keep the dick. Indeed, the rapper Nicki Minaj and the rapper Big Lotto got into a bit of a spat on Twitter last night over Nicki Minaj's latest success single, Super Freaky Girl, being moved from the rap category to the pop category and the latest Grammys nomination for this upcoming award ceremony. Nicki Minaj was questioning what makes a pop song if songs like Big Energy by Big Lotto are being placed in the rap category while hers was moved to pop. The rapper took to Instagram her discontent, saying that she is rapping on all three verses of the song and reminded fans of her longtime feud with the Grammys.
Yes, thank you. They stay moving the goalpost when it comes to me.
The rap mogul and her song will not have to, will have to go up against acts such as Adele's Easy on Me and Beyoncé's Break My Soul. In lighter news, Canadian comedian Lisa Gilroy took a funny clip to her Twitter last night where she really had her fans thinking it was a serious matter in the first half, explaining how she took five lucky fans on set with her and how it went horribly wrong.
Almost immediately, when we got there, one of the guys drank from the chocolate river that I said was off limits.
After that, we saw a bunch of other comedians and celebrities such as Patton Oswalt, Gosh Dag, David Cross, and more. They started to repost her video, also continuing with the joke, reposting it with captions like, "This is heartbreaking," and "This is one of the most beautiful things I've seen." Lastly, Kim Kardashian is reminding us once again that she's taking steps to differ from her TV reality persona and diving more in her late father Robert Kardashian's legacy. In fact, Kim has a new true crime podcast on Spotify called The System, The Case of Kevin Keith.
The case of Kevin Keith is deeply twisted and incredibly heartbreaking from all sides.
An Ohio man has been sentenced.
The first episode aired October 3rd, and the show will be an 8-part series all about that one case. But the deeper we go, it came out yesterday that the survivors of the crime Keith Dean has been accused and convicted of, and they're not happy with Kim podcast, as the podcast alludes to Dean being innocent while his victims, who were 6 and 4 at the time of the crime, believe him to be guilty. Kevin Keith was convicted back in 1944 of murder in the deaths of his ex-girlfriend, Marichelle Chapman, her 4-year-old daughter, Marche, and Marichelle's aunt, Linda Chapman. She did not contact us, not once I had said one of the survivors. Finally, on a completely different tone, is Jim Gordon, the late night show host, banned from popular New York restaurant Balthazar? Apparently, he got unbanned pretty quickly after the ban, and it has been said that it's not the first time he's being accused of being an impolite diva in public spaces.
Canada Post is honoring Montreal-based flight simulation technology as a part of 5 postage stamps promoting pioneers in Canadian aviation. Canadian Aviation Electronics is the manufacturer responsible for the flight simulation. Founded in 1947, the CAE's reputation has grown to the point of international appeal, attracting pilots and flight trainees to the simulation location in Montreal. Weather look ahead for the week has rained through today and tomorrow. That should clear up by Friday, and we're looking at a sunny weekend. Temperatures are also going back up. We're looking at highs of 18 degrees on both Saturday and Sunday. That's your news till 11:30. Thanks for listening. For Concordia News, I'm Connor Tomalty.